All right, I'm going to talk about a course that we teach at the University of Tennessee. My co-authors are my grad students as well as an ag economist. And our issue was we had declining numbers. We were down to very few students in our majors. This is back about, 12 years ago. And so we thought, how do we make ourselves relevant to the rest of the university? We're a land-grant university. We're the College of Ag on the other side of the railroad tracks, but we're still part of the larger university. So we came up with this idea, some faculty, to do this three-credit course called Cultures in Cultures and Civs. We called ours Soils and Civilizations. And now we've, about the last 8, 9, 10 years, we've taught it to just about 2,500 students. And so now we're kind of going, we're looking at a lot of the data. We're going to pull out some publications on this. But one of the things we wanted to do was try to pull in more students into our majors, because we drew the conclusion that people didn't know where we were. I was getting students in Introduction to Soil Science, and all of a sudden they were juniors and said, wow, this is interesting. If we'd have known this before, we'd have changed majors. So the idea was to see if we could get anybody in it. And generally what happens is, I think it's roughly 2% of the students that take it will actually change majors. Some of them will change flavors of engineering to our department. Some will actually make the switch to soil science. So we thought, I do a lot of work overseas, and one of the things I've noticed is that we don't do a good job making the link between what we do and what the world's going to look like in 2050. We have some skills and some things that we do that we aren't communicating well enough to everyone else. And so the idea is, we wanted to make a strong link between civilization, sustainability, and the soil. We wanted to identify this critical link between population growth and food deficit nations, where the population is going to be and where the good soils are and where that puts us. Then the idea also is that we have a real role here in food sufficiency and hunger and peace. If people are hungry, they aren't happy. And this whole idea of it fits in there. So the more you talk to people in the embassies across the world, they're very interested in food and what we can do to help. And the other thing is we have a lot of good programs at the university. Unfortunately, I think we're often viewed as we just do sows, plows, and cows. We don't do the other things that are more important. So our numbers came out. Our numbers are doing really well. We had built it. They weren't coming. We got a number of students coming in. The number of people coming off farms was declining, so we had a whole different change in population in the university. Agriculture continues to be a good employment sector, so we need to gear them, if students are interested in that, to do that. And then the other thing is that we just got to keep in mind that this whole thing that we do is really important. The things that go on in the College of Agriculture relate to where we're going to be in the future, the whole idea of defense security, and then the issue of where the population is going to grow. The point I make with students is that 1959, I think it was, we hit 3 billion people. I was born in 58. So we're up to 7 billion and change. And if I live a long life, we're going to be at 9.5 billion when I'm gone. Now that's a huge change. I think we've picked the low-hanging fruit when we look at increasing food production. I mean, there's another big one we could pick real easy. If we get the portion size down and quit throwing away food, we could do a lot to feed the rest. But the reality of it is there's a billion people every night that go to bed hungry. So it's a big issue. So what do we cover? Well, we do a lot of failures. The Fertile Crescent, Mesopotamia, Easter Island, the three islands, Greenland, Iceland, the Anasazi, the Mayan Empire, Haiti, the Dust Bowl. And the point is, the students see these stories, and it kind of wakes them up a little bit, and they realize that the biggest problem is, the complaint I get is, you don't give us any successes. Where are the successful civilizations? And the point is, there aren't a lot of them, unless you want to include the Bushmen, a low impact, pretty rough life. The Inca did good. They did okay until the Spanish showed up. DR, that's an interesting one. It's a top down, where things were pretty much mandated how it was going to be, and they did a good job then with their environment. Japan's also a top down. Papua New Guinea, the thing that saved them really is probably that the first explorers never found them. It wasn't until they overflew the place that they realized that that there were a lot of people there, and there's a lot of agriculture going on. And then down in the American Southwest, the Zuni are actually quite, were quite successful over time. Another thing we cover in the course is, I give these bizarre assignments. We have 240 students, and I don't want to deal with people that lift assignments. So every assignment I give is something you can't find on the web. One of them is we had them go back and find their family 500 years before. I said, you're going to write a novel, but that's okay. Just kind of figure out where it is, where they're from, and then do these things. And one of the things was, is, you know, what do you eat? Where does the food come from? So that's the idea there. It's one of the last assignments. So they have to know New World foods from Old World foods. If they're Italian, they can't have spaghetti and tomatoes, because that's a new food. So the point is, do that. But one of the things that came out of this that shocked me was that as the students were writing this thing up, they found out that roughly 10% of them had Cherokee ancestry and never knew it. Likewise, a good proportion had black blood in the family, and this was a big secret. So this is racism. You can't do anything but call it anything other than racism. So we followed that up a little bit. And one of the other things that was really funny about this was the last question was, describe, if you're going to spend Thanksgiving with them, tell me what you'll eat, what you'll do, and then do it both places. And the big thing was that came out, and they said also take a gift. So they went through this whole thing of all the food that we had here in contrast to what they would have there. You know, if you jumped times 500 years apart. They wrote that up, and they said, then take a gift. And that was a real interesting, enlightening thing. So some of the students said, I'd take him a tractor. Well, that's brilliant. As soon as you run out of gas, you're done. And then others, some of them had Cherokee blood in, said, I'm going to take them copies of treaties that were broken as soon as they were written. And others said, one's going to the old world, we're taking vaccines for the upcoming, which was kind of interesting. And then but the funniest one, but you got to understand the South, was the guy that said, I'm going to give them guns and bullets and tell them to shoot every white person they see because they'll lie to them and take everything they have in a few generations. And it was kind of interesting. That's one of the things. Another thing we talk about is the Highland Clearances. It turns out that roughly 60% of the students in our around there come out of the Highland Clearances, where really the churches were involved, the Protestants versus the Catholics, and they basically just came in, burned down the village, just put them on boats. And the interesting thing is that then you talk about the boats they put them on, and this is some of the things I learned, is that they put them on boats that they put 500 to 700 people on the boats, and then they talk about the fact that these were classified as slave ships that could only take 400. I had never realized that was such a commodity, that it was regulated as how many slaves you could put on a boat, but then also the fact that the people coming out of the clearances were treated even worse than that. So many died on the way over. And then we also have a local ethnic group called the Melungeons in Tennessee, and that's a point to bring up, is that you can't find them on the censuses because they're not black or they're not white, so they don't really count. And so you can't go back and see who they were, because we don't keep track of people that aren't white or black. That's some things we do. So then we follow Jared Diamond stuff here, looking at, we use collapse, we use guns, germs, and steel, and then I also put a text together of readings that we can do. But the idea is, you know, how do you deal with a problem? Do you ignore it? Do you try to solve it? Or you just bury your head in the sand and go on? But it's a fun class to teach. We talk also about the future. We do some stuff on climate change, which is real. You know, we have, it's very right-wing in the South, and so none of them believe there is such a thing as climate change, you know, that we're into this kind of thing, but we go over it anyways. Energy, food, GMOs, we do some stuff on carbon sequestration, land degradation and erosion. We go over no-till, we talk about smallholder farming. We talk about the great Tanganyika groundnut scheme and why that failed after World War II. The assignments, again, are pretty bizarre. We write memos to dead presidents a lot. So we'll do stuff to Roosevelt during the Dust Bowl. How would you fix this? We've done some stuff with President Obama regarding carbon trading. Another thing I do is, out of 240 students, you ask, how many have ever been to a state park in Tennessee? Very few. Okay, so you're under 10%. You're lucky if you have 5% that have been. If you have 10 hands go up out of class of 200, you're doing pretty good. So what we'll do is we have a really good ethnic cultural events at these state parks. So we populate them. And that's one of the things that I get awards for, sending students to the museum on campus. They say, where are all these students coming from? They find out from my class, and I get called up. Can you come over here? And I get an award for sending students to the museum. All right, this is what you're working with here. Another thing, you can be a rock star real quick with this course. Another thing you can do here is that we do this thing with calculating food miles for a day's meal. So that the whole idea, you can eat real healthy, but if your spinach is coming out of South America, look at your miles. If your strawberries are coming out of California, you're running an energy deficit on these things. I tried to get them to get to find their voice too. So all of them were complaining one year that they didn't have money for their textbooks. And I said, do you want to fix it? And they said, yeah. I said, okay, somebody get me, I'll give 3 points to somebody to figure out who we're going to email. And I don't want just the first person, I want them up the ladder a little bit. So we got a name and we did an email bomb. And it was really kind of funny because they started getting real emails back, and then they were copied emails. So I knew we were hitting a nerve. And then finally, the email came with a solution for the next semester. And then I got the email from the provost that said, Neil, do you have any other questions on this? No, we fixed it. I think this is the kind of stuff that's kind of important to help students realize that they can make changes. The other thing is that we have National Area Rescue Mission, and I allow them to go there. After the first exams, you write it bad enough, they're interested in making some points. And so we populate that with a lot of students, and they find out that is kind of interesting. So they make food or they serve food. And these are the resources we use. I've only ever used one video, and this one is just a classic. Where they interview people they took it at the right time. It's right when people were very old, and they talk about what they grew up with there, and it's a classic. The impact, we're seeing, they really do change their minds. This is a popular course. Years ago, I had a secretary. We had it such at the university, you couldn't dictate who got in your class. You just had to put your enrollment up. And so what we would do is we would make the enrollment at only allow 15 students until the freshmen could register, because that's my target population. Well, one year the secretary forgot, and she opened it up to 90 students, and it filled up before the sophomores could register. The class was full, and she was in tears in my office. I said, just don't worry about it. Just disenroll everybody except for the ones in our department in college. She says, you can't do that. I said, we're going to do it. So we did. And then the dean started calling, and then my dean called and said, you know, you can't do that. You need to put another section in. I said, you know what? I'm teaching this course over my load. I can't determine who can take the course, so that's why I did it. If we could change enrollment to where we can put so many freshmen, so many sophomores. I said, okay, you need to do it. I said, I will. You get me, but I need some help. I need some grad students. I need some. So what was interesting was... In August, my department had showed up and said, I don't know what you did, but he said, you better make it happen. We have you a lecturer. You have to hire a lecturer within 3 weeks. We hired a really good PhD candidate. And then he said, you better fill another section. So I filled another section of 70 students, I think, in 3 or 4 days. So now it fills immediately. But it's one of these courses that we're seeing some change with, and I think I'm about out of time. But this is the whole deal, is that we need to, this is a big issue. The Gen Ed game is really important. You can make it, you can really make an impact with it, but we have to work better at getting the money to flow downhill from the big house to really make this work. And I think, you know, that's kind of where it's a great course to teach. It's having an impact. Students like it, and the students that come up and talk to me after class out of some of the activities they do, it's really a game changer, because it gets them off their phone. You know, it gets them doing something else. And that's what I am.
Thank you.